Last week, we reviewed four basic methods of kashering. Just to review very briefly, one method is simply to wash something with cold water and soap, and that removes what's on the surface. Two, the second method was libun, which means to kasher something with a blowtorch. In other words, to make it so hot that the metal itself turns a glowing red color. The third method of kashering is called libun kal, that is the miniature version, and basically what that means is raising something to a temperature of about 550 Fahrenheit, basically turning an oven on high for about an hour. That's libun kal. And then the fourth method is hagala, to kasher by immersing in boiling water. And we went over the procedures for each one of them. And what I want to discuss this evening is which method works for which thing, which item. And there are a number of different issues to consider. So let's go in order. We differentiated between food that is on the surface of the utensil that you can see versus food that has been absorbed into the walls of the utensil. If there is nothing absorbed, if the only remnant is food that is on the surface, then you can wash that with soap and cold water, and that's all that's necessary. If you have food that's in a utensil, and the food is only cold, and the food is dry, then it's not absorbed into the walls of the utensil. You can kasher that utensil by simply washing with cold water and soap. Or if it's liquid, as long as the liquid does not remain for 24 hours or longer, because if a liquid remains in the utensil for 24 hours, even though it's cold, it's as if it was cooked in that utensil. If the liquid is a sharp liquid, like vinegar or a citrus or an acidic liquid, then even a shorter amount of time is considered as if it would have been cooked in that utensil. But absent that, if you have a non-acidic liquid that is in a utensil for less than 24 hours and it's cold, then nothing is absorbed, it's only on the surface, you have to wash it with soap and water. So therefore, practically speaking, we mentioned last time, if you have storage containers that you only use for dry food, you don't wash them in your dishwasher, you don't put them in the sink, they've only held dry food, you just have to wash it with soap and water. That's to change it from meat to milk, that's to change it from Pesach to year-round, year-round to Pesach, that's all that's necessary. I mentioned that the one exception to that is if it is a utensil that is a knife, if it has a blade. Because if it has a knife or a blade, a sharp surface, then that utensil is always considered as if it was cooked with the food that it touches. If you take an onion and you cut it with a meat knife, then the onion becomes as if it was cooked together with meat. That's a concept called dukha de sakina. And that gives special importance to an item that is cut up. However, besides a knife, if it's another kind of a utensil, then if it only had surface contact, you only have to remove what's on the surface, and it's kosher, both for year-round usage and for Pesach.
So if I took an onion and I peeled it and diced it with a knife, and then I cooked it in a spaghetti pot?
Then the pot would be treif, it would have to be kosher, and any food, you know, would be treif. Yes.
When you're not sure.
Yeah.
Like
about what?
If you had someone peel an onion and dice it for you, and you don't know if it's spaghetti or...
Well, it depends. When you say you're not sure, I mean, you're never sure unless you see it, but do you have some reason to suspect it might have been?
Well, I'm just thinking in the past, like, there's been times where I've had help at home, and I always told them that fruits and vegetables were neutral, and that if I had some clean fruits and vegetables, I never specified use the meat knife or use the dairy knife. You know what I'm saying? And then I would come home and I'd cook whatever I cooked.
Right.
It never occurred to me to say, you know, to think that because it's an onion, it's different than mushrooms.
Right. Well, it's hard to recreate it going backwards, but it certainly would be the right thing to say to help. And that's a very important thing, to make sure that help is doing, you know, what you want them to do. That's a very hard thing, obviously, to oversee.
So that's something that's now in the past. When I kind of go back, I don't
right.
know what comes in. For all I know, maybe I have a chafe pot, but I don't know it. So that's why
I wouldn't worry about going backwards. I would worry about going forwards. That would be my Yes.
You mentioned going from the rest of the year to Pesach. I was going to say from Pesach to the rest of the year.
No, you don't mean that's the kosher. Right. No, I didn't mean that. Right. I was imprecise. Right.
That thing about dry, if you have containers with sugar
and dry in it.
You said it's not washed in a dishwasher, but if it's washed in a sink, then...
Then that may be a problem.
But, like, how can anyone have a container that they never wash? Like, it doesn't make... Like, to me, I don't understand how that could be.
Well... Different people do different things.
I don't want to go to their kitchen.
Different people do different things. I'll just put it like that.
Well, don't think that that's what we do. We don't wash our things.
Okay.
For yourself.
You could have a
flour
container.
Well, I just will eventually we'll wash it.
How often?
Refill it.
How often?
Well, I mean, I don't know. When I get to the bottom of the container, I usually rinse it, wash it, and then refill it. If you wash it in a dairy sink,
that would be the best procedure because it gets a little complicated, right? Okay, so those are some examples that would work just with cold stuff. For example, your candlesticks. It is not necessary to kosher your candlesticks for Pesach. You don't normally eat with them. You don't normally put food on them, and on Pesach you are probably not going to put them on your plate and eat with them, and so therefore just a surface washing to make sure there's no food that's adhering to it is all that's necessary. It's not necessary to do anything more. Yes?
What about the tray that I put underneath and only for my candlesticks?
If you keep it on the table, then it's probably a good idea to kosher it, because that could easily have chametz that's there that sits, that some liquid could spill and could stay there overnight. Maybe, I'm sure not in your house, but in someone else's family. But if it's the kind of thing you keep on the table, it would be a good idea. If it's the kind of thing you keep on a separate table, then it would be fine to use it.
But where are you washing it? You're not washing it in a candlestick?
Tell me what you mean. Well, what do you mean?
Like a candlestick. You only wash them before passing.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No. Right. That's fine. Because you're just removing what's on the surface. That's all. Okay.
What about the cup you turn at the other night?
It doesn't have to be koshered.
You should just place it down in your sink in between.
Yeah, it would be hard to actually cause a problem with that. I would just wash it with soap and water. That's all the things necessary. Okay, good. We'll try to keep working on that list. Okay. Number two. Let's go to Libun. Libun, I described to you, is pretty much impractical for an individual to use as a method of koshering. A lot of people think that it means you take a blowtorch and you move around the object with a blowtorch. That's not what it means. It means that you take a blowtorch and you move it so slowly and you spend so much time that the metal, every single spot of the metal, becomes glowing. And what that means is you are burning. First of all, obviously anything on the surface, but even anything that is absorbed into the surface is being burned. It doesn't exist anymore. And that is a very, very hard thing to do. Most items will not stand up to that kind of heat. If you get a small propane blowtorch, you're going to be there all day on a small piece. It's really not a practical way of doing it. My opinion, you'll hear different opinions about this, but my opinion is that the self-cleaning cycle of an oven is not Libun, because it does not achieve that temperature. Of course, Libun would work for anything, because you're just destroying whatever would be there, but you could also destroy a lot more. The problem is, so what that means is, if something needs Libun, it's almost impossible to kosher it. That's the problem. So what needs Libun? Well, first of all, number one, Libun works on anything. If you would theoretically be able to do Libun, you could kosher anything that you could do it on. That's number one. However, you remember, we talked about a difference between two methods of cooking. And I described to you that the English words don't very precisely mirror the halakhic distinction. And there are two terms in the halakha. One is called bishul, and the other is called tzli. Bishul, we translate as cooking. Tzli, we translate as roasting, but the words don't convey the meaning that we wanted to give. Bishul means to cook something in the presence of liquid. Something in a pot. Something with some kind of a liquid. Tzli means to cook something with no added liquid. You can call it broiling or roasting. The English words really don't convey that meaning. But bishul means when there is liquid, sli means when there is no liquid. So the basic halacha is, if you have a utensil where the cooking was done with sli, then libun is necessary. And the theory is, because when you have a piece of chicken, for example, directly on the metal with no liquid to act as a medium, then the transference of the flavor of the chicken into the utensil is stronger than if you have something like chicken soup, where there's the chicken is diluted in the liquid, the water of the soup. So any utensil that receives the food directly without added liquid, in other words, through tzli, requires actual libun, and for all practical purposes cannot be kosher. That means cannot be kosher from milchix to fleishix, from treif back to kosher, and from year-round to Pesach. So let me give you some examples.
Does that include the oven? Like if it was something with royal...
Let me give you some examples. I'm going to talk about the oven. Let me give you some examples. First of all, the oven racks. Now, there are two different possibilities. Some people put actual food directly on the racks of their oven. And some people never put food directly on the racks. They either use tinfoil or a pan or something like that. If you put food directly on the racks of the oven, then you are going to require actual libun in order to kasher it. And if you cannot do that, then you will have to cover the racks. I'm only talking about the racks. Cover the racks for Pesach. So therefore, if you do actually put actual chametz food on the racks directly on Pesach, it is necessary to cover it at least with tinfoil. That's number one. I'm just talking about the racks so far. If you have a broiler pan, so by definition, a broiler pan is a kind of a pan. If you broil something in it, so then that's a pan that has received food through tzli. It cannot be kosher except through actual libun, which is impractical. The same thing applies to what you might call a roasting pan. If you have a pan that you use to cook chicken without adding any liquid, or to cook a roast without adding any liquid, if you have a flat pan that you use for that, that cannot be koshered, practically speaking, at all. That's correct. If you have a barbecue grill, that would require actual libun, and that's why it's not possible to kosher the grate where the food goes with the barbecue grill. It's not possible to kosher for Pesach. It's not possible to kosher from treif to. That's why you go to. Some places have the parks. They have barbecue grills. It's not possible to kosher that using the grates of those things, because that would require actual libun. There is a difference of opinion on the following issue concerning a skillet. Because if you think about it, a skillet is a little bit in between. When you cook in a skillet, is it bishul or is it tzli? For example, if you, let's say you saute chicken breasts in a skillet. So you add a teaspoon of oil. Well, what is that considered? Is that considered as if really it's a dry food that's put into the pan? Or is that considered like you added liquid? You start out with a teaspoon, and by the second batch, maybe there's no oil left. So maybe the second batch is actual tzli. Does it depend on how you normally use it? Or does it depend on if you have ever used it dry? Maybe one time you use your skillet and you put food in without any liquid. Does that mean that now you won't be able to kosher it? Or does it depend on the normal usage? Those questions are all the subject of disputes within the halakhic authorities. And basically speaking, the bottom line is that skillets are a difference of opinion as to whether they can ever be koshered. And it is preferable, if it is possible to avoid koshering skillets, it's preferable to avoid it. Certainly from year-round to Pesach, we do not kosher skillets. And if the question comes up to kosher a skillet, let's say a skillet became treif, so preferably we would not kosher it, unless there's some extenuating circumstances that make it really wasn't completely treif, or it's only a question that maybe it was treif. We might put together several doubts, one on top of the other, to allow it. But a skillet is a little bit in between these two issues, and preferably should not be koshered. If you have a blech, a flat piece of metal that you use for Shabbos, So that cannot be kosher, because there you have food. If it spills, so you have the actual food that would be sitting on the heat directly on the metal, that cannot be kosher. You have to have a separate blech for kosher, for Pesach.
What about the
remedy?
The burners get red hot, so that's okay, right?
The burners, well, the burners don't really get red hot, but the burners have a, I'm going to come to the burners in a minute, but the burners have a different situation. Usually the food, when it's hot, does not fall directly on the burner. Usually it's burned if it's on. So the burners are kashered simply by turning them on high for about 5 minutes to burn off whatever is there. The problem that you have is with the space between burners, because there you can have food that spills, and then that's hot food, and that's resting there, and you would have to actually kosher that, but it's hard to kosher that. And so if you have space between the burners, it needs to be covered in some way, with foil or with a piece of metal or something like that. Yes?
You address the skillet. Partly skillets are other, I guess, utensils that have non-stick surfaces. Is this addressed? Because I'm wondering if that makes a difference.
It does. It does. I'm going to come to it in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to come to utensils, to the materials in just a couple of minutes. Okay. The third method is called libun kal, or the lighter version of libun, and that means basically turning the oven on high for an hour. Basically, that's practically what it means. Libun kal works for anything that Haggadah works for. And it's useful because often an item is too bulky to put into another pot of water, but you can put it in the oven. So let's say you have a pot, your biggest pot. You use it with liquid, so you're going to kosher with Haggadah with boiling water, but you just don't have a bigger pot to put it into. You don't have a way physically to do it. Or a saucepan with a long handle, and it just won't fit inside another pot. You have to make sure that you remove everything that's on the surface. Remember, koshering doesn't help for what's on the surface, only for what's been absorbed. You have to clean it, and then you simply put it in an oven, turned on high, for 1 hour. Of course, it's got to be an item that can stand up to that. You can ruin a lot of things like that. Plastic handles, of course. I'm sorry? Yeah, Tupperware will not work. Will not work for that. Anything that you can kosher in through Haggadah, you can kosher through Libun Kal, and it's a very useful thing. The majority opinion is that it is Libun Kal that works to kosher an oven. Let me just take a moment to discuss the subject of the oven. So I talked about the racks before, because the food actually touches the rack, if it touches the racks. But let's talk about the walls of the oven. The walls of the oven is a little bit of an unusual situation, because the walls of the oven do not directly touch the food. And the food, what is the contact between the food and the walls of the oven? And how would that contact interfere the next time you're cooking something? So basically, there are two ways. One is, if you have a food that has some liquid in it, it can splatter. And so that's like particles of one of the foods touches the oven. But what's going to happen? It splatters now. But what's going to happen? The next time you put a food in, what's going to happen? It's not exactly clear. The other issue is, there is smell that's given off. Reah, the steam, the odor, the smell of one food is in the oven. So there's a difference of opinion about how significant those two issues are. And basically speaking, to give you the bottom line, what we say is as follows. Let's say you take a food and you wrap it up and you put it into an oven. Let's say a treif oven. What's the problem? There can be no problem of splattering because it's covered. There can be no problem of the previous odor because the food's covered. So therefore, that's permissible. Maybe you didn't cover it well. Well, let's go twice. So let's say you cover it twice, and that's the halacha. If you take a food and you cover it twice, two layers of wrapping. And by the way, in a microwave, that would be two layers of plastic or paper, whatever you use in the microwave. But a microwave works the same way as the oven. for this purpose. So therefore, you even if it's a treif oven, as long as there's no treif food in it at the same time, you're allowed to make use of that. Yes?
When they warm up the meals on airplanes...
And that's exactly what they do when they warm up meals on airplanes.
But how do you know that there's nothing else in the same oven?
Well, they usually use separate... It's double wrapped. The truth is, it really wouldn't create a problem.
Why would it matter? Yeah, why would it matter if there was fake food at the same time?
Right. We really only do that because we're worried of it getting mixed up, and we're worried maybe something cut through the layers, and, you know, that's more of a remote issue. But that's the reason that that's permissible, and that works under all circumstances. So, for example, if you have... Let's say you have two separate ovens, one for meat and one for milk, and you wanted to cook meat in the milk oven, and you did double wrap it, that would be fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. If you don't want to get confused, if you don't want to get messed up, that you don't have to do it. But from a halakhic point of view, that would be fine.
So if you're having a lot of guests and you want to use your dairy oven, normally what I would do is self-clean it first. You don't have
to. Well, I didn't get to self-clean.
I didn't think you wouldn't be able to use it if everything was wrapped. Really
if well. You were, if there was no residue of food in the oven and you were able to double wrap it, okay? That's well,
yeah, but you just said it has to be double wrapped and
mixed. Right. Well,
there's not much
fear
from the
pregnancy. No, right. Well, they do because it stays wrapped up. That's not really a concern. That's not really a substantive concern. Now, the what about to kosher an oven? If you want to be able to use an oven without it being covered. So there's a difference of opinion on this issue, but the mainstream normative opinion is that libun kal is sufficient to kasher an oven. That means turning it on high for like 550 Fahrenheit for an hour. That is kashering. What are you doing when you do that? What you're doing is any residue that is on the absorbed into the walls of the oven that has been splattered on, that is absorbed, is burned to the extent that it's not giving off any taste that is contributing to the next food that you cook. That's the point. So, libun kal, kashers, and oven.
Including the wrap.
No, I did not say that. No, let's go one step at a time. Libun kal, kashers, and oven. That means from treif to kosher, from year-round to Pesach. Libun kal. So what do? You have to first clean it, you have to remove the residue, then you have to turn it on high for an hour. A much easier way would be to use the self-clean cycle. The self-clean cycle for sure reaches beyond the temperature of libun kal, but it for sure works for that. My opinion, what I suggest to people if you're koshering an oven, is to turn it on the self-cleaning cycle, then to wipe it out because there's usually some ash that remains, and then to put it through the self-cleaning cycle a second time, and that's kosher. And that works year-round, that works for Pesach. That is not sufficient, though, for the racks. If you put food directly on the racks, that libun kal is not sufficient by itself. Well, one step at a time. If you put food directly on the racks, libun kal is not sufficient for the racks, and you need to then cover the racks. If you never put food directly on the racks, then you don't have a problem with the racks. Right, you don't have a problem with that. Because you don't normally put food on the racks.
What if you put a pan on it?
That you don't have to worry about. It's not touching the food directly.
Bought a house or something, for example, and you're keeping your oven, and you don't know if they've ever seen them or not. Do you not worry about the
No, I think it would be normal to assume that people have put food on the racks. If you did not buy it new, I think that you should assume it had been used and either get new racks or not put food directly on. I'm sorry? I'm listening?
I'm just wondering when someone puts food on the racks and the oven.
It's true, I can't imagine.
You buy put baked potatoes, you buy... You pizza, you pizza. Why would you do that? You make the crust soggy. The whole point is to get a crispy. The whole point is.
They don't wash their containers.
I have one. I use it. I promise. Different people do different things.
No, you're right. You shouldn't assume.
I'm just telling you the halach. I'm not telling you how to cook. That's a different series. Now, by the way, so when you're koshering your oven for Pesach, you can kosher for anything else that you want to. If you have big pans or things that are bulky, you can put them in at the same time. you can fill up the whole oven at one time and kasher everything in it if it will withstand that that temperature.
And it's all also olive oil from the
right. And that's across the board with all the things we're discussing. So basically you could do the same thing. Let's say you only have one oven and use it both for meat and for milk. So then the best thing is if one of them is always covered, then you never have a problem. You can always do that. But if you want to be able to cook something that's uncovered, if you would run it through the cycle, you'd be able to do that. There's also an opinion that says if as long as you waited 24 hours between meat and milk or milk and meat, that's also fine. And the reason is as follows. Let's remember what we discussed a couple of weeks ago. If a utensil has absorbed food into the walls of the utensil, its ability to emit those particles, to release those particles, that ability is stronger in the first 24 hours, and that ability weakens after 24 hours. So therefore, once 24 hours go by, the ability of the particles of food that have been absorbed into the wall of the oven has been diminished. And put that together with the fact that in any event, the walls of the oven are not necessarily close to the food itself. Many halakhic authorities say that as long as 24 hours have passed since the last thing was cooked and there's no actual food residue in the oven, it's permissible to use it for the other type. That's for year round. For Pesach, of course, it has to be kashered and it has to be set aside for Pesach.
That's interesting. On what would you cook the
there you go.
Do that?
Sure, of course.
Wait 24 hours and then put dairy in without
sure.
self-cleaning.
Sure.
Anything.
Yes.
No,
the oven has to be right.
Itself,
correct. Yes, I would. Sure.
Oh, so good. I can do
there you go.
I'm sorry, I didn't right. know that.
There you go.
Where would you put the utensils in the oven? On the rack or what are you going to do? Because if you're going to put it on a rack, it means it must be stuck.
No, but it still gets hot. The only point is, and that's why we give it an hour. If you look at different halakhic sources, you'll say 40 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. It's not really, you need to bring it up to that temperature. I just say an hour. So this way, even if utensils are stacked, they'll all get hot. So that's, yes.
We once called the VAD to ask when we talked about the house something that we have an oven downstairs about, and they said something about filling a pot with boiling water, putting it in the oven, turning it on high for an hour. Does that have anything, like why would they
Could that possibly have been concerning a microwave oven?
No.
I'm not able to understand what that
means. I don't know why they said that.
I'm not able to understand.
Maybe it was something
who
didn't understand
this,
but
I'm not able to understand.
Can you kosher a toaster?
It's almost impossible to kosher a toaster oven. Remember what we... Well, there are two reasons. Number one, a toaster oven would require actual libun, because the halakha differentiates between a larger oven that has venting in it. All of our ovens have a vent. That releases heat versus a toaster oven that in the halacha is called a smaller oven that does not have a vent, and so it would actually require a blowtorch, which would ruin it. That's number one. Number two, it's virtually impossible to completely clean a toaster oven because the crumbs get all over and it's hard to reach all those spots. So practically speaking, it is not possible to kosher a toaster oven from treif to kosher or from year round to Pesach.
If you use a toaster oven you want to toast bread and you want to use it for a sandwich, but you're only toasting the bread in there. Can you do that?
No. In order to do that, you'd have to double wrap the bread, in which case it wouldn't really be toasted. It would.
Toast it in your oven. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you can't, if you cook something in a toaster oven, it takes on the quality of the toaster oven. Okay.
It also passed me time out from year round to taste up. You could go just as easily take a milk pot and kosher it and use it for meat.
Yeah, one of the things I'm going to say in a little while goes like this, but I'll say it now. Theoretically, a person could have one pot and they could just kosher it back and forth. Today use it for milk and tomorrow use it for fleishes and just keep koshering it back and forth. Our six after 24 hours. You wait 24 hours and you kosher. Wait, right. Every other day. You eat every other day. You have two pots and you every other day. The problem is our sages were worried that a person, if they did that, might forget what they're up to. So... Right. Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. TTIash. So, there's a halacha that says you're not allowed to kosher just from milchix to fleishix or fleishix to milk. However, you are allowed to kosher for Pesach, and when you kosher, you're returning it to Parav. So you can redesignate it. So, as a suggestion, I've heard Rav Heinemann say, if you have an object, and it's milchik, and you want to be able to use it for fleishik, so So kasher it and use it on Pesach, and then when you kasher it, it becomes tarif. So you can redesignate it at that time, and then you can switch it at that time. So Pesach becomes the great opportunity for transferring the designation.
Well, I've heard something like if you don't use something for a year, then...
I'm gonna talk about that. Let me wait just a couple of minutes for that, because that gets to another issue.
You could almost in theory then take all your plashik pots in hand and kosher them, use them for pesach, and not have to have a separate pesach
dishes. Right, sure.
And is it preferable to have a separate set of dishes, or is it just
There's no preference. I would say that your family life is a lot better,
right,
if you have a separate set of dishes.
But you can't kosher the pot. Can
you
kosher dishes?
Well, I'll get to the different materials. Let's just talk pots and pans. But we'll get to the materials in a couple of minutes. Let's go to Haggalah. So Haggalah is the main method of koshering for utensils that are used with liquid. And Haggalah helps for anything that had been used with cold. Knives, for example, can be koshered with Haggalah, pots and pans. There is an interesting halacha like this. You know, there's a separate subject, we discussed it a while ago. When you buy a new utensil, you have to immerse it in the mikvah. Talked about this a few weeks ago. When you immerse something into a mikvah, the halacha is you have to immerse the entire utensil at one moment in the mikvah. The water has to touch all the surfaces at the same moment. When you kasher, it's different. Let's say you have a large object that won't all fit into the boiling water. You can hold one end in 15 seconds, take it out, and then turn around and hold the other end in. You can do it piece by piece, and that's fine. That works. It is necessary to be able to be sure that you have removed the surface particles from every part of the utensil. And therefore, if it's the kind of utensil you can't reach everywhere, you're not going to be able to kosher with Haggalah. For example, many pans have a lip. I should have brought some demonstration. But if you have like a flat pan, so it sometimes the metal curves underneath, and there's some space between the two layers, and you can't see it. You can't get into it. You can't. You could put a toothpick in there, and you probably would be kind of disgusted about what you get out, depending on how you use it. But you can't get into it. Or for example, sometimes you'll have a utensil with a handle. So sometimes you can take the handle off. So that's the best, because you can clean all around it. You can make sure it's completely clean. That's fine. Sometimes you cannot remove the handle. That's also fine. You can kosher it with the handle. But sometimes it's a little bit loose, and there's a gap, and you can tell there's stuff in there, but you can't get it off because it's attached, but it's not tight enough. So in any kind of situation where there are particles of food that you can't reach, again, Haggalah only helps for what has been absorbed into the walls of the utensil. And if you cannot remove what is on the surface, Haggalah will not help. And it's a very serious consideration anytime you're koshering with Haggalah to make sure that you inspect it to make sure it is the kind of utensil that can be koshered. Now, certain materials cannot be kashered because they do not release the particles that they've absorbed. They absorb so much that to remove what has been absorbed will ruin them, and we're worried that if you try to kasher, you won't do it completely. And also, certain utensils, we just don't know. The Gemara, our sages, tell us how to deal with certain materials that they had, and I'll go over those in just a moment. But there are certain new materials that we don't kosher simply because we don't have a tradition as to how they act in terms of absorbing and releasing particles. So, halacha is like this. Any kind of metal can be kosher, either Haggalah or Liban if it's necessary, or Liban Kal, the ways that we've talked about. Earthenware cannot be kashered. I'm talking about where it absorbed through heat. So it would have to be, you'd have to use Haggalah, but it would probably break. You would have to use a Liban, it would for sure break. And therefore, there's no way to kasher that. And that applies year-round, and that applies for Pesach as well.
Through heat or through soaking in
water? Right, either one. Those are the same, right, either one. Most authorities are under the assumption that China, glazed pottery, or China, is in the same category and cannot be koshered. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. But the mainstream normative opinion is that China cannot be koshered, neither for year-round, meat to milk, treif to kosher, nor year-round to Pesach. Plastic cannot be koshered. And that's an example where we don't know. It's a new thing that did not exist. I'm sorry?
I was going to ask how relevant is that.
They knew that because they knew it, they didn't know. And so plastic in general, if it's only used cold as a storage utensil, you can kosher because it's just washing with soap and water. But if it's been used with hot food, then it cannot be koshered both for year-round nor for to kosher for Pesach. Porcelain is another material that there's a difference of opinion as to how to treat it, and it cannot be koshered. That's the reason that dishwashers are often lined with porcelain. Many sinks are lined with porcelain, and they cannot be koshered. So it's necessary to have a rack or a mat or a plastic box or something that you have for those kinds of sinks. It's a great thing to have a stainless steel sink because you can kosher a stainless steel sink. It makes it much easier both for year-round and also for... I want to hold on to that for a minute. I'll come back to the sinks. Practically speaking, what it means is dishwashers and... One step at a time. Dishwashers and the dishes, like china or dishes, cannot be koshered. Now, there is an opinion which says as follows. There's an opinion that says, if you have a utensil, let's say a dishwasher, porcelain, cannot kosher, and it lays without being used, clean, but without being used for 12 months, 1 year, then it can be koshered. The same opinion applies to china. You have a set of china, has not been used for 12 months, it can be koshered. Now, I would have to say to you that this is a minority opinion. It is not a mainstream opinion. And where most halakhic authorities would use this would be in some type of situation of extraordinary necessity. For example, let's say you had a utensil and it may have become non-kosher. You don't know it. It may have become non-kosher. Meanwhile, it's china. Meanwhile, a year has gone by. And let's put some other criteria in. It's a very expensive item, and it's irreplaceable, let's say. So then it might be a mainstream halakhic approach to say we would allow you to kosher because it's not so clear it needs to be kosher to begin with. Or, for example, let me give you another example. Let's say you have a person that's just becoming observant, and they're just starting to keep kosher, but their commitment is not 100%. And if you were to say to them they have a set of heirloom china and it's very dear to them, and let's say it's expensive or sentimental, and if they were not able to kosher this set, they may not be willing to continue with the process of being kosher completely, it may be the right thing to say to them, listen, this is a minority opinion. Under these circumstances, maybe it's the right thing to make use of a minority opinion until such time in the future as you want to change. But it is an opinion. It does exist. You can't say a person's treif if they do that, and it may be the right thing to make use of such an opinion under those kinds of circumstances.
How would you do it then?
The opinion that would be used is you would put it in a dishwasher, you would run it through the hottest cycle of the dishwasher, and you do that 3 times over the course of 72 hours, over 3 days. 1 time per day, 3 days, and that would kosher those dishes.
This is 12 months on the calendar.
Solar. Right. Solar calendar.
Because we have Julius's like his grandfather's china, and when we lived before, there was nothing. The only thing that we were not sure might have been on it before we were like doing everything with the hefshir was maybe cold. like the meat was always kosher, but maybe cheese that wasn't kosher.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always cold. So we haven't used it in, it's been, we're married 9 years now, we haven't used that china in the last 6 or 7 years, you know? Been,
well,
I didn't want to throw it out because it was his grandfather's.
Right.
We,
so if you're saying it had only the possibility of having been used with cold,
yeah,
and now this time has gone by, I would say the same thing. Sure, you'd be able to. Sure. Sure.
Kept it. I don't know. Probably, yeah. I mean, sure. I would
try one piece first. I don't know. I don't take responsibility.
I'm putting plants on this beautiful. I don't want to do with it. So
but that would certainly be a legitimate thing,
yeah,
under those circumstances. Now, a dishwasher is a little bit more complicated because even if you have a stainless steel dishwasher, but there are two problems. Number one, usually a stainless steel dishwasher still has some plastic parts. So if there are I didn't get to the racks. I'm talking about the parts. The jets and around the bottom, around the place where the water goes out. So if they're plastic parts, that's going to be a problem, number one. And number two, the racks. So even if you had no plastic parts inside, you would then still have to replace the racks because the racks are plastic. So that's why it's not always practical in a home. Even a so-called stainless steel dishwasher is not always practical to be able to kosher. That's the problem.
In the kitchen, we're just talking about with the dishes, right? And when cold was put on it. Don't you just have to wash it with soap and
water? Well, maybe it was left soaking in water overnight. I mean, that's a hard
right,
thing.
It wasn't,
right,
it,
they would just need soap and water. Right, right, right. You can borrow the tape. There are several publications. Sure, there's a publication that I rely on from the Baltimore Vada Kashrus called Kashrus Currents. It's on. There's a website that has all the information. There's a magazine called Kashrus Magazine, which is a very good magazine that has a lot of information and sources to other places. Well, that's Rabbi Eider, right? That would certainly be a good source, Rabbi Shimon Eider.
There's something circulated locally here before Pesach by the Vibe,
which is yeah.
Okay, I haven't had a chance to see that yet, but I'm sure.
Right,
right.
I think it's fairly in depth.
Well, Rabbi Eider is probably the best source. Eider. And he's a very important halakhic authority and a very clear writer. On a number of different halakhic subjects, and I would certainly recommend his work. There's a website, kosher.com, which has links to all the major kashrus organizations, so you can see, like Kashrus Currents. And what? Well, I guess you could do that also. Okay, now. Yeah, sure, of course. Sure.
Cancer.
I was coming.
Canter cups. I've heard some different opinions even about melting canter cups for Mike.
I gave him the answer.
Okay, one of them has been, and what we've been doing over the years, not only do we wash it and clean it before boiling water, over before we cover it, and then we cover it.
Okay. All right.
Now, how much too far are we going?
Quite. I'm going to make this evening worth it for you. Yeah, I've seen that. Okay, so let's go like this. Concerning countertops and sinks. So the same thing. And tables. Goes like this. If you clean them just with soap and water and you cover them, then for sure you have no problem. That's fine. There's nothing else that's necessary. You don't have to do anything else. The difficulty comes if you want to be able to kosher them so that you can use them without covering them. And there, it depends on the material. If it's plastic, melamine, formica, it cannot be kosher in that manner. So you always need to cover it. So it doesn't help to pour boiling water because you still have to cover it and you don't need the boiling water. If it is stainless or granite, then it can be koshered using a process called irui. Now, I didn't include this in one of the methods of koshering because it's really a little bit in between two other methods. But what it means is as follows. Let's talk about the sink. If you have a porcelain sink, then you can't kosher it. You have to be able to somehow, you clean it, so you get rid of the food, but you have to have a box or a basin or something like that. But let's say you have a stainless steel sink. So then, the way that you kosher it is as follows. You have to wash it with soap and water. You have to leave it without using it for hot for 24 hours. And then you have to pour boiling water over it. Let me explain. When I say pour boiling water, well, but that's important because often the water cools off. You need the water to roll and boil. And then you start to pour. The water from the flow from the pot, that flow has to touch every inch of the surface. So that means to do a sink, you're going to need four or five big potfuls of water. And that will kosher that sink, and then the same thing will work for a countertop, stainless countertop,
so
or
you need
a lot for a countertop. And you also need a lot of towels to pick up all the water that
paper
you're flowing. Well, I don't know if paper towels will do it. It might be blankets and blankets. But whatever you do, that's what you need in order to be able to do that. Then you do not need to cover it. You may find it easier just to cover it rather than do that, but that's, of course, up to you.
What is propane small blowtorch?
Well, first of all, you'd ruin it, so don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure, you'd ruin the stainless. You'd ruin the finish of the stainless. Yeah.
At the hospital, for years, they always, I know, because they're using this on these very long,
Right. I've worked for many years in a commercial kitchen. We would use boiling water on the countertop. I guess you'd be working like leave on call, but you really have to go slowly. I mean, it would really take a long time. What happens is, all too often, koshering degenerates into, you know, a spritz. And especially in a commercial setting, or especially when you're taking responsibility for a caterer or for something that the public is going to use, it really needs to be supervised carefully to make sure that the proper attention and level of detail is going on. This will be the first year I'm not koshering a commercial kitchen in many years, but it's a really big job, and you've got to really be not just to know the halacha and not just to be careful about it, but to be very persistent in making sure that it's done correctly, because it's a gigantic job and it's tedious and it's difficult, and you really have to do it carefully. It's a very difficult thing to do that. If it looks like this metal, it's stainless steel. If it's a color, it's porcelain.
Yeah, I thought porcelain was porcelain.
No. Mm-hmm. If it's a color, it's porcelain.
So like, if you don't use that sink for castles, you still have to cover it, right?
You have to clean it, sure.
You have to clean it, but you have to cover it.
If you're not going to use it, that sounds like a good idea, so no one comes to use it by accident. There is a problem, and I don't have an answer to this, of burners where it's a smooth burner, like a ceramic glass or ceramic or whatever they call them, where it's just one smooth surface. The problem is... First of all, it's not the burner, because the burner itself gets hot. That's fine. But the area between the burner, you can't use a blowtorch because it will crack. You can't just wash it with soap and water because it's not sufficient. You can't cover it because you'll ruin it if you cover it.
But if it's glass, can't you pour boiling water?
No, boiling water is not sufficient for glass. Boiling water is sufficient for stainless and for granite, maybe. You know, not for glass.
But
not for glass.
The use of this, say, only to put that pot on the circle where it's an element. So there is no need.
But the problem is, it spills over, and you put the spoon there, and food goes there all the time. I'm not talking about you.
Okay, no, but the actual purpose of this glass is
what
I have, and I
don't have an answer. So I don't have an answer. I don't know how it can be done. If anyone hears of an answer, I'd love to hear it.
What's wrong with just covering it?
I think you'll ruin it. It won't withstand that. It won't withstand that.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm talking about like the flat, the whole flat.
Right.
Right. Right. But then you've got air.
No, it'll ruin it. It will ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It will scratch it.
But the cover will
wait. Right. It'll ruin it. can't do it. So I don't have an answer. If anyone has an answer, I'd love to hear.
I think everybody's smart. Their kitchen.
Your refrigerator and freezer do not have to be kosher. They only have to be cleaned out. Some people have some people like line things and put paper. It's not necessary. It's also not a good idea to put lining down because you will interfere with the flow of air and you can mess up the refrigerator in that way. So that's better not to do that.
Why is it difficult?
Because again, it's just cold food. It's not liquid sitting there. It's just no.
You should remember that people should replenish.
You could, but it's unusual that you'd spill something and it would be sitting there for 24 hours, sitting in liquid.
And aluminum paper does get cold as well, so not taking in. So just the air is talking about.
There is no need.
Let's say you have. Package of meat that is not kosher Pesach, but you still have that package of meat, you'll need it in the freezer. If you double wrap it in, let's say, a double plastic bag.
You don't have to double wrap it. You just have to put it in a separate shelf and just...
That's a separate shelf?
Just put a note or a piece of paper. Fine. You don't have to use a towel. You can use a piece of tape. You can, whatever. Just as long as you remind yourself not to go into it. There's nothing wrong with seeing it. No, there's nothing wrong with seeing it.
As long as it's labeled, identified.
Right.
Do you have a Passover in your house? No.
We don't have one. No.
I have a question that goes beyond Pesach.
Okay.
After Pesach is over and you're supposed to wait a certain amount of time before you can start using hummus again.
No, why?
An hour.
Until it's going
to be back.
Will they buy it back?
Hold on. Let's back up. There's several different subjects that got mentioned very quickly. So let me try to clarify. There's a halacha like this. If there's a Jewish person who owns chametz during Pesach, which he's not supposed to do, then that chametz is prohibited for eating even after Pesach forever, that food. So therefore, if there's a store that's owned by a Jewish person and the store remains open during Pesach selling chametz food, the chametz that was owned by the store during Pesach should not be eaten after Pesach. It only refers to the chametz, and it only refers to what was in the store during Pesach. So therefore, once a certain number of days go by, that doesn't exist anymore. It's only however long it takes for the food to turn over. That's number one. Any questions about that? Yeah. Yes?
So in a store, like for example, what's the problem? The store owner is Jewish and not selling the non-kosher Pesach food, have to sell his chametz.
Yes, sure. I would assume a store like Kosher Quality sells his chametz and does not do any business with his chametz.
I know he doesn't do any business with his chametz.
I would assume.
I didn't know if the store was obligated. Like,
yes, the store is absolutely obligated. Right.
If someone like Kosher Quality, he sells his chametz, then they could buy it back after Passover and
right.
sell the pasta that was on the shelf.
Immediately after.
Had he not sold the chametz, that pasta would be prohibited to be bought
forever.
Right.
Forever. Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
What about
now, if there is a store that does both, they sell their chametz and they stay open selling their chametz during Pesach, my opinion is my own personal opinion. I mean, I didn't come up with it.
Is that the
only
Jew?
Well, it's owned by actually by Italian and a Jew.
I'm not talking. Well, that's a separate issue. But my opinion is it is not right to buy that food after Pesach, because if you sell your chametz, that means that you don't own it. If you take something that you've sold to one person and then you sell it to another person, then either one of two things. Either you really didn't mean it when you sold it the first time, or you're stealing. I mean, it's one or the other.
But now, as a buyer, how do you know what the owners of the stores are doing? And who's a vera? Whose problem is that? I mean, when you go into the store, you don't know if it's a Jew who owns it, if they sold it from it, you should be buying it or not.
So the halacha is as follows. Mm-hmm. You are required to investigate to the best of your ability who owns the different stores. If it is something that is public knowledge and it's possible to find out, you should inquire. If it happens to be a shell company in Bermuda and it's limited partnerships, and you know that, you don't have to worry about.
IGA being as an example, that if they say, I didn't know this and now I know it, a Jew is a partner in ownership. I mean,
if the Jewish person decides the policy of the store, then it's considered Jewish owned.
Unless they choose, it's a Jew and Italian, they own it together.
And we all shop.
I would assume the VOD probably will share information about which stores are owned.
They do sell their
home. I'm not asking that question. I'm asking whether. Well, if they sell their chametz, then that means. I assume that means they needed to sell their chametz. That means it's Jewish owned. And
but let's say, but they're selling
50% of it is owned of each store is owned by a Jew.
Okay. I'm not answering the question of IGA because I don't know who owns it. All I'm saying is, if it's owned by a Jew and it's open on Pesach, my opinion is not to buy that chametz after Pesach.
But how do you not, when you go in and buy a week later?
Cereal chametz.
It's been on the shelf.
I would say cereal probably stays on the shelf for 2 weeks. Yeah.
You think it's only 2 weeks later?
Sure. I would say in a grocery store today, I would say once 2 weeks passes, for sure you could buy anything in the store. Sure.
Pesach is over.
Excuse me, I didn't finish.
Wait,
okay.
So
that's part
get
one.
A list of which stores we can buy
yes,
at?
Ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Now, that concerns someone, a Jew who owned chametz wrongly on Pesach. Let's talk about a Jew let me start slowly. Let's talk about a Jewish person, and now Pesach is over, and they go to a store owned by a non-Jew and they buy chametz. They don't have to wait any amount of time. As soon as you make Abdullah, Pesach is over, you can buy chametz and you can eat it. There's no amount of time that you have to wait. If you sell your chametz, now you sell the chametz to a non-Jew, that chametz you're not allowed to use until it has been bought back on your behalf. So the question is, when does that happen? So the simple way is, if you know who it is that's going to buy it back, you could just hang around that person after Pesach and watch and see when he or she buys it back, and then you know it's bought back. Since most people would like a little more specificity about that issue, so in the Adaptive Israel Polytheistic calendar, we say that if you have sold your chametz through Chazon Sheni Uri Marciano, who is our guy, then you can assume that by 10 p.m. after Pesach it is bought back for you. The reason we say 10 p.m. is because what happens if we can't find him? What happens if he's in a car accident? What happens if he gets late? So we want to cover the eventualities.
Late. Oh, okay.
But the concept is, as soon as it's bought back, it's in your possession. Normally, it's bought back much earlier than 10 p.m., and that's the time. We say 10 p.m. in the calendar simply to cover that eventuality.
Okay,
so pizza won't be ready until 11.
Okay.
So if a bakery owned by a non-Jew that sells kosher bread, can you buy bread
after? Sure. Sure.
If it's been made on Pesach?
Yep.
Is there any place like that?
I don't know.
There was a New Haven.
What about bakery?
And we
kosher bakery.
And we had Edge of the Woods. We tried to get them to open.
Kosher bakery is a baked bread before Pesach. We use it on Pesach, presumably they sold it Pesach. And then after Pesach, they turn around and defrost the bread and sell it.
And that one,
I'm not waiting in line for that.
Pardon?
I'm not waiting in line for that.
Lots of people do, because they don't realize that they're doing it.
Is it frozen or is it frozen?
No, the bread was frozen.
Yes, Karen.
I tell you what has been done by the Mimuna, people are buying the flesh of it's a pancake, usually after Pesach, the Moroccan are making the Mimuna in celebration of taking out all the chametz. So usually they're making already, but they are buying it before Pesach,
Right.
Because they don't want to have the dish. They're putting it in their freezer, and then
they sell it, and then when they buy it back, so they can use it. Fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you have a high chair.
Yes.
Okay. So I understand the tray is plastic, you can't use it unless it's covered in plastic.
Who said that?
You just said that if it's plastic.
Yeah, I don't. My opinion is that you only have to wash it with soap and water. High chair just needs to be washed with soap and water, because it's not normal to put such hot food on it. So therefore, it's like a utensil that's only cold. So it's.
Oh yeah, because if you have like a sink, now you don't eat on the sink. The food falls all over it, right? Can you clean it? But they have like little crevices.
That's all. Just soap and water. That's fine. Right. Correct. 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 Let me just mention one last idea. The chametz represents certain characteristics. Chametz in the writings of our sages represents laziness and materialism. And Pesach is about overcoming those traits. Pesach is about destroying chametz, getting rid of chametz. The difference between chametz and matzah is that matzah is not allowed to remain without being worked. It's not allowed to remain idle. Pesach requires so much effort and so much physical effort. It's important to try to focus on the spiritual and the ethical dimensions of what it is that we're doing. When we search for chametz, we get rid of them, we kasher and get rid of chametz. We need to just be aware of the fact that it is supposed to have some type of spiritual impact on us. And, you know, it's a terrible thing when people work so hard to prepare for Pesach and they finally come to the Seder, they're so worn out, they fall asleep at the Seder. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to be able to appreciate the Seder, to be able to enjoy the Seder. And a person, right, but there's got to be some chayrut there also. And I know it's tax season, I understand that. But we need to try hard. We need to try hard to make it that the process doesn't take over from the goal. And the goal is that it should be inspiring, that it should be moving, that it should be something that's spiritual. And all these things are important, but they need to lead to the goal and not to detract from the goal.
One last question.
Yes, sure.
A glass table.
Yes. There's a difference of opinion concerning glass. Some hold, let's take glasses just for a moment. Some hold that a glass cannot be kashered. Just one second. So there are two opinions concerning glasses. One opinion holds that glass cannot be kashered. You would have to boil it, and it cannot be boiled, and therefore it cannot be kashered. And therefore you need to have separate glasses for meat and milk, separate glasses for year-round and Pesach. There's a second opinion that holds that you can take a glass, you can wash it with soap and water so there's nothing on the surface. You can then put it in cold water and let it soak for 72 hours, 3 days, in cold water, changing the water every 24 hours. So that is the second opinion. So there are two opinions. Some people do not rely on that and they insist on having separate glasses. Some people do rely on that, and so there are two valid opinions, and you can choose what you want to do. But those are two opinions that exist.
Why
do some
glass table?
I'm sorry? Well, it's just a way of being able to leach out or to soak out whatever might have been absorbed in a way that doesn't destroy the utensil because it's glass.
But it's 72 hours, per se, I'm
it's just a long, long time. Yes? So it would be the same thing, but it really wouldn't be practical to soak it.
Right.
So my suggestion would be to cover it. Yeah, it would be best to cover it.
You can't just wipe the table with soap and water.
Sorry?
You're not really putting hot food on the actual table.
The cost of service, you could change your table for that.
Well, that's covering it. That's the same thing. That's the same thing. You're not talking about pads. The, I think that, yeah, it's a little bit of a gray issue. I think sometimes, I mean, if you're always careful to use placemats, you don't get food on the table and you don't touch it, maybe, you know, if you have kids, I'm not so sure. you know, it's probably, as a suggestion, it's only 7 to 8 days, it's better to cover it. Is it absolutely necessary? I'm not positive that it's absolutely necessary.
Cleaning tools, like cleaning tools. Like if you're cleaning, like you mentioned, Windex, or if you're cleaning on the table, like that's
right. No, those are all fine.
It's fine to use any cleaning
tool. Correct. 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 Yes, Karen.
No, I'm just wondering what the difference is between a table and a high chair. I mean,
Well, because a high chair, you specifically are going to be careful not to put hot food there because there are small children that are nearby. Yad saletas. That's something that's hot to the touch. On a table, something might spill. You know, there might be hot food. So there'd be more of a risk.